Hello, welcome once again to Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, and all other things nerdies. Here today, my name is Derek. I got with me Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony.
Hey.
It's so freaking weird sometimes.
Well, I don't know what to do.
There's only so many times we can say, hey.
Hey. Well, I got to admit, it's still one of my favorite ones is when I'm like, hi, welcome to Drunk on Comics, and you're just, hi. So, all right, guys. Well, we're going to jump right in. I'm going to get going on Off the Shelf. Little warning about Off the Shelf before we get too far into it. We are a spoiler-heavy show. We're going to talk about things that happened in the books. We're going to talk about plot points and how books end and this and that. So if you want to read your books first, hit pause, read them, then come back. Otherwise, if you like spoilers, you're in the right
place.
Everybody
dies.
Everybody. Well, that's a given. So, Off the Shelf this week is brought to you by Detroit Fan Fair, which is happening October 26th, 27th, and 28th. At the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn, Michigan. We're going to be there doing a live recording of our weekly comic book review podcast, like the one you're listening to now. We'll also have a table there, so you can come up and, you know, get a picture with Tony and Matt. You can hug Kevin. You can poke me with a stick, as long as it's not too sharp of a stick. You know, whatever you want.
Yeah, I'll be there with my free hug sign.
Free hugs?
I'll be there giving out sticks.
Awesome. Oh, great. So anyway, if you guys want to find Detroit Fan Fair, you can find them at DetroitFanFair.com. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. Go check them out. It's a cool show, and it's only going to get cooler because we're there. So, Kevin, what you got this week for Off the Shelf?
Oh, my gosh. You're leaping right into, I don't know, Off the Shelf with Kevin here.
Yeah.
And, yeah, because I don't get into the new stuff that often.
Well, I have to say, when Derek told me he picked up a new comic book, I was kind of surprised.
He picked up multiple new comic books.
Yeah, you know what? I go there, and I'm like, okay, I picked something that I know you guys aren't going to pick up, something that I might have some interest in. And, well, this week, I picked up actually two books, and I'll just group them together. I picked up a couple of issues of the Before Watchmen series. Now, like Dr. Manhattan, this has actually been out for a few weeks. And then also Minutemen. And this was a little bit more recent. I do think that came out this week. But I figured talk about it just together because they both are so closely related. And I figured I'll start with these two, and then if I like them, I'll pick up the other ones, which were Night Owl, Rorschach.
Silk Spectre.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Comedian have one?
Yeah, he does.
Are there different writers and artists for each of them, or who did those?
Oh, ones? Yeah, okay. So I'll first talk about Dr. Manhattan. Let's see. J. Michael Straczynski, Adam Hughes. Adam Hughes did the art. Michael Straczynski?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Did the script here. And the Before Watchmen series, I just saw it on the shelf. I'm like, oh, well, this must be talking Before Watchmen. So I'm like, all right, well, I think I get the concept already. So
you know what's great is that you have no idea even about the controversy that went around with this, I'm guessing.
Well, all right, let me start talking about my opinion of the book here, and then I got to hear more about this controversy because, if I were to guess at what the controversy was, it would be making these in the first place.
Yes.
Because Alan Moore,
yep.
That's right, Alan Moore, he did Watchmen, and then now, is he still alive?
Yes, yeah. Okay. And very, from what I understand, very pissed off that he doesn't own the rights to these characters that DC does, and, you know, it's a question of whether or not DC should have cashed in on the popularity of the Watchmen by doing something when Alan Moore was not allowed to have any say in it, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
So we don't need to talk about that because it's been...
No, I want to talk about that just in brief, but let me talk about Dr. Manhattan real quick. And Basically, it's just going through. I figure it's this book. It's spanning him, Dr. Manhattan, and before he became
before Watchmen.
Exactly. It spans the like the 40s and 50s, early 60s.
Okay.
So this is actually covering actually quite a few decades. Half of it is probably even half of it was him after the accident that caused him to become Dr. Manhattan. The other half was him years before that. I figure he was probably early 20s.
Okay.
But I'll be honest with you, when I was kind of disappointed about this. This is the one I picked up because Dr. Manhattan had the most interest in me because he's really the one who has actual superpowers. So he has an interest in me in that regards from all the Watchmen. But reading the story, it's just a lot of him theorizing how the universe works, and I thought it was kind of boring, actually.
The art looks good. I mean, from what I can see, I hadn't looked.
Yeah, it still has this this book, the Dr. Manhattan books, has a lot of artistic feel to it, like the Watchmen series that was fucking awesome.
Now, I didn't pick up any of these. Was everything concluded at the end of this book, or is
it... This is a one of four.
Oh, one of... Okay.
One of four. So, I learned something this week, because I also picked up a few other things. I picked up some Green Lanterns, and I learned that I gotta keep on reading them, because I was very quick to put Green Lantern aside. I picked up, like, three or four issues a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, what the hell is this? But I picked up a couple more recent issues, and like, okay, I just gotta give it time, which sucks because I'm spending $3-4 on an issue. I want a little bit more instant gratification.
Well, you know, and that kind of goes back to though what we talked about a little bit last week about, you know, if you're somebody who's a new reader, what do you do? And sometimes you just gotta jump right in.
Yeah, jump right in and give it some time. So overall I was a little disappointed in Dr. Manhattan. Maybe it's going to go somewhere in the next handful of issues. But if you like deep, thought-provoking stuff, jump right into it. But I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy.
And
give me some booty and some titties to look at.
some 3D nipples in your
face. Yeah, I'm ready to go. Now, Minutemen, also a four-part series done by Darwin Cook. Yeah. Now, which is weird. Now, is it very often that a writer and an artist,
that one guy does both?
Yeah.
It's not often, mostly because of the time that it takes, but sometimes I think those are some of the best ones out there because he's got the vision of what it is that he wants. Now, collaboration goes a long way, too, but, you know, sure. It really depends.
Okay, well... Well, this one I liked it a lot more. It talks about the Minutemen, which the Minutemen were the Watchmen back in the 40s.
They're the Watchmen before the Watchmen.
Yep.
So they could have just called this one Before Watchmen, and they wouldn't have had to say it was Minutemen.
Sorry, apparently. Whoa! See, we're getting back into this being way too deep for me.
Yeah.
No, this was a great. Intro to the Minutemen, which is like the original superhero group or hero group back in the 40s, and really they just talking about one of the leaders of the Minutemen, I believe it was Captain. Not Captain Manhattan. I'm blanking on his name already. But,
Captain Hook? Captain Crunch?
Captain Nemo?
No, it'll come to me. I'm just blanking on you guys for
Admiral
a second.
Admiral Akbar?
But what he did is he just simply, because there was about seven members, and he just breaks down what he thought of each character, because he's writing a book this book takes place in the 50s, and he's sent it to publishing, and basically he's just talking about his experience with the team.
It's kind of a cool backstory.
It is a cool backstory, and it'd be interesting to see. Because I imagine in a four-part series, they're going to expand what the team did and how their success and failures led to Watchmen.
Has there been anything in this? Because I know in the Watchmen, they had scenes of the past of the old, and they kind of had just quick glimpses of the old Minutemen when they kind of talked about the good old days. Have you seen any of those in this? Do you think those will come in book four of these things when they get closer to?
It's entirely possible. I didn't see anything here. It was mainly aside from the beginning part where it was the character in saying his book is going to be published. They just focus on the past, events that happened in the past of every single person in the Minutemen. Art here is definitely a little bit, I noticed it's a little bit different than what was printed in Dr. Manhattan, but yeah, different artists. I mean, that's going to happen.
Strong use of color in that one, I noticed. I mean, just from glancing over, I mean.
That's what... was always impactful of Watchmen was the great use of colors.
Now, did Cook do the colors on this too, or was it somebody else?
Let me get back to you on that one. Okay.
Phil Noto did the colors. Yeah, and Noto's a great artist on his own. So,
where do you help me out, brother?
Right here.
Oh, okay. It's like right there. It's
right in front of your face.
Right in front of my face.
Yeah.
I'm on the spot. So, yeah. The Minutemen was good. I enjoyed that.
Are you going to go buy both of them? Are you going to pick up issue two?
I'll keep on going. If they pick up at all, then I might try some of the other ones. I'm not shutting the book on. I'm moving on to... something other spectacular like my Kevin Keller.
Spoiler alert that I'll be
talking about later.
Well, I'm glad you're going to keep continuing picking up this series. Yeah. That keeps me from having to buy it. So I can borrow it from you.
No doubt. But
cheap bastard.
I do have to say one thing. Sorry, the art in Dr. Manhattan. I just want to bring up one quick thing. It seemed like back in the day, Dr. Manhattan liked to wear clothes. Before the Watchmen, but when the Watchmen came, he's like, "Let's just have my package show."
No, there's some penis.
There is.
There it is.
There's some penis.
Yeah.
So at some point, that's what the mystery of Dr. Manhattan, because this looks like he's on the moon. So this is afterwards. So I'm wondering in this they're going to say when he decided I don't need clothes.
See, I'm trying to...
I'm guessing his clothes burned up, like, you know, when he was trying to leave the atmosphere.
You know, it's been a year since I've... I saw the movie first, and then about a year later, then I just read the trade paperback. But I think they... Didn't they address that in the book?
I don't recall. It's been years since I read that.
Yeah.
But anyone that's read it knows what we're talking about.
Or seen the movie.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But I think, though, if these do pick up, I might be more enticed to revisit Watchmen again. Because, like I said, that was a good book. And, So, again, Dr. Manhattan, I give an eh. And Minutemen would be like, yeah, I picked that up.
On a scale of yeah. One gets an eh, the other's like a yeah. All right, Tony, what do you got?
All right, first book I got to kind of go over is Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Number four, but also number three. I know you guys talked about number two on one of the weekends. I couldn't make it, so.
And we talked about number one. As well. Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of go over the whole thing again just because reviewing three and four together, but also kind of the only thing that I jotted down about this was...
Well, hold on. Let's give credit where credit's due.
Well, Cullen Bunn as the writer and...
Dale Bartolagic.
Yes.
As the artist.
Now, is through 1 through 4, has it been the same cast doing everything?
Yeah, yeah, it's a 4-part miniseries. Yeah.
Okay, so everything from the lettering to the to the inks to the
cover artist,
janitorial duties.
Yeah. Yeah, Lee Lawfridge on colorist, Joe Sabino, letterer, Cara Andrews has been doing the covers.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't, because, I mean, this has been a 4-part series just released, like, basically in 1 month, right?
Well, yeah, and that's the one thing I was going to just mention in general. It seems like Marvel's been spitting out some comic books back and back and back. Like, I was surprised the next week when I went to my comic book store and there was number 2, and I was like, wow, I didn't have to wait a whole month. And there was number 3. That was kind of cool. And there's a lot of other titles that have been kind of spitting out.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot more weeklies. The one that I've been hooked on, which I'm going to talk more about next week, is Dead World. That was a 5-part weekly series.
It would be interesting to see, like, if see some stats to see if that actually helps a series.
You know, I think for a miniseries, it's got to.
Yeah, for miniseries, yeah, because then it gets you're hooked, and you might as well just pick it up right away.
Well then, if if I'm picking up something new, I might go back and pick up a couple back issues.
Yeah.
Well, something that we had mentioned with this, too, is it'd be greater if it was more than a 4-parter.
Yes, I mean, the what if
this could totally be a monthly ongoing.
Oh, yeah. Well, but, I mean, we'll get to the end and spoil it all, but, I mean, right before the end, it showed how this could go on and on on.
But like I was saying a couple minutes ago, the only thing I really jotted down was it was fucking awesome. Like, although I have artistic differences as Derek and Colin about the Watcher, I still thought that his death was pretty good. And then the death of all the Marvel characters, like, it was interesting to see how did this person die, or how did he destroy that person?
Spider-Man getting his brains blown out.
Or how the Punisher with the puppet and just making him put the gun up to his head.
You know, I'll be perfectly honest with you. Actually, that panel where Spider-Man got his brain blown out, for me, it stuck up in the head, but actually... I was a little hesitant of actually just even looking through the other two issues.
Because that one was so graphic.
It was so graphic. It actually...
Well, plus, you don't ever see that or think of Spider-Man...
You never see Spider-Man getting killed.
Yeah. So it was like one of those... When I was like, wow, how did that happen? Like, very, very different type of book. So listeners, seriously, when we're going to still keep talk about this, but... You really just need to read it to understand.
And there is a parental advisor on the front that says, not for kids. That is correct. This is not for kids.
Again, man, for me, if you're squeamish, don't even bother. I'm sorry. that's just...
Which you love. Like, you loved Cullen Bunn on The Sixth Gun.
Yeah, absolutely. That was great. Well, violence was in The Sixth Gun was at least okay. It was just something about, I don't know if maybe it was just because it was Spider-Man.
Because it's more of a lovable character.
Or because there was actually a little bit more detail to
it. But I think that's one of the reasons why this book works so well is because there's such familiar characters. Because there's sick
motherfuckers out there?
Well, like us?
I like that he had like a lot of... thought put into this as well. Like, I was initially upset after number 2 when Wolverine just died from an explosion, and you're thinking, how can Wolverine die? But you know what? I said, I'm going to write that one off and saying, you know what, though, he's killing all the Marvel Universe, maybe he had a special bomb or whatever. It was sweet to see Wolverine actually come back in number 3 and die again.
Yeah.
Like, it did show, okay, Deadpool kind of missed him the first time and didn't really think of the healing factor. Well, let's get him with a carbonadium blade and really kill him. Even all the freaking death traps that he had all the other X-Men in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just genius putting the thought into...
Him wearing Beast's fur as like a, you know,
it's like a hunter's outfit.
A mountain man.
Or did he gut him and
wore his skin? You can't hear it, but Kevin just shuddered.
Do they show that?
Yeah, right here.
He's wearing his skin.
Wait, do they show him like gutting him?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No, but I mean, you know what he does, but. So Tony, spoiled the end for the listeners.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I love Deadpool enough to kind of know the character, and I know that he breaks the fourth wall. And when he spoke about the fourth wall, when he was going to the Nexus of Realities, I kind of had a feeling which reality he was going to go to. It didn't ruin anything for me. It was awesome, but as we've already kind of told all the books now, spoiler at the end, he kind of comes to the writer's world. He's right outside the door to the writer's office. It's actually even quite hilarious having the writer sit there talk about what they're writing in the book to have it, you know, conceptually really happening right outside the door.
Yeah.
I love that they're talking about Dalibar. Oh, you got to make me look sexy. Yeah, you got to make me look good. I don't think you guys paid him enough, but...
Well, I don't know.
I mean, that could be sexy for you. I don't know, but...
Yeah, so... No, but the thing I like, though, is that, you know, at the end, I mean, it's so true to the Deadpool character is that, you know, he turns around before he's walking in to cut everybody's, you know, heads off and gut them like pigs. Deadpool turns back around to the reader, you know, and says, hey, I see you out there watching, you know, and I'll find you soon enough, which I just thought was great. I'm like, that's cool. Like, because I wasn't really sure how they were going to end this. Like, I'm like, it didn't really seem like there was, until I got to that last page, pages, I'm like, oh my God, that's perfect.
Yeah, and knowing Wolverine, just, that's kind of what I kind of started getting when he was like, you know, no one knows, understands, we're puppets, and I'm thinking, he knows he's in a comic book. He's one of the few characters in all comic books that understands he's in a comic book, which is why writers can have so much fun with him.
Yeah.
Throwing in that humorous bit of, hey, I know who I am and I'll just make these jokes anyway. So ultimately it was definitely a great 4-part series. I would love to see some more artistic, Marvel Kills the Universe, you know, extended version.
Sure, I could see that, because with Marvel Zombies, then that just take off to
a whole
different thing?
That was huge for a while, and then it just kind of...
I mean, it'd just be interesting to see him, even Deadpool team up with a couple of people, just the deaths of people that you don't ever see, and how
they
transpire.
And maybe have, like, different characters go kill the universe. I mean, obviously Hulk's a simple choice, but... You know, like, what about Dupe kills the Marvel Universe?
Who?
Dupe. He's this weird little, kind of looks like a green jelly bean that's an X-Man, and I really don't know what his power is.
Yeah, I don't know either. He's just Dupe, all he says, Dupe. Oh.
Yeah.
So it'd be an interesting read.
Not as much of a read as a look, because if all he's saying is Dupe.
Right. Well, I'll be sure to Bing that later.
Sweet. Well, actually, this is a really good transition because the first book I want to talk about this week is Captain America and Namor, number 635.1.
Which just blows my mind.
Yeah,
these two together, just because I'm not keen on what's going on in the Marvel universe, but.
Well, this is...
Especially since I'm going through and I'm just reading stuff from the 60s. And
well...
He's just a total douchebag.
Kevin, you'll actually like this one, because now, this one was written by Cullen Bunn as well, and art on this was by Will Conrad, colors were by Chris Peter, and letters by one of the hardest working men in comic books, Joe Caramagna.
Yes.
Now, this point one issue takes place in 1942. It's during the height of World War II. This is a great single-issue story. It shows Cap and Namor fighting against the Nazi organization known as the Thule. And the Thule has resurrected a bunch of dead Atlanteans to wield a weapon that humans can't. And what that weapon is, it's a mask called the Kraken. Now, in the comic, you know, our heroes defeat the Kraken, Namor destroys the mask, yay, happy ending. But there's a little bit of backstory going on at the same time during this that it's flashing back and forth. of Namor being summoned by a group who is simply referred to as the Covenant, and they want him to join their group. It's a bunch of super powered or super intelligent people and races and aliens that their purpose is supposedly to fight against evil forces in the universe. At the end of the book, you find out the Covenant probably isn't as good as, you know, they would like people to think. They brought one of the members of the Thule into their ranks. They pieced back together the mask of the Kraken. So is it really a happy ending? Maybe not so much. But I loved this book for one primary reason, is it took me back to reading the Invaders comic books that I used to love when I was a kid. You know, I mean, you got, you know, in the Invaders, it was Cap, Namor, and the Human Torch fighting against the Nazis. And it was just, it was cool to see them doing that again. This is just a really good single issue story. I'm glad it was a point one. You know, it's one of those things, I don't know how this would tie into anything else going on in the Cap series, because I'm not reading the Cap series. I picked this up because I saw the cover of Namor throwing a Nazi tank, and I was like, done.
Hearing you say, though, that's the one you read, I drew the parallel of Marvel kind of throwing it out there now because of what we discussed last week, with me and my brother discussing the Avengers and the Illuminati getting together, mm-hmm. and Captain America saying, no, he'll come. Namor will come because of our past. And I kind of see this being a tie-in to that issue to kind of explain they did have a past for newer readers that may not, and obviously it's a point one, so it is kind of for new readers as well.
Yep.
If they did happen to pick up the AVX Avengers and first off not knowing who the hell the Illuminati were, but then why is Namor all of a sudden showing up and against the enemy, Captain America. So that's the reason why I don't see it tying into any Captain America is going on right now. And
yeah, I don't really know how it does tie in, if it does tie in at all to anything, but it's a great issue. I just really liked it. One of the things that blew me away, though, is on the first page, you know, you've got Captain America, Steve Rogers, peak strength, reflexes, blah, blah, blah. The Submariner, Namor McKenzie. I didn't know that Namor had a last name, let alone that it was McKenzie.
That's weird.
I'm like, huh. His last name's McKenzie. Okay. You know, so then all of a sudden I pictured, like, you know, him as a little kid on a bike and having, like, you know, the little license plate on the back that said McKenzie. You know? I don't know. But anyway, well worth it.
Because they ran out of Namor plates.
Well, you know you're not going to find the Namor one. I mean, that's just silly. So that's definitely my pick for my regular off-the-shelf stuff this week. Kevin, you have something else.
Yeah, well, I'm going to head off the beaten path and actually take yet another 180 from last year's recommendation of Cherry.
Last year's?
No, last week's.
Oh, okay.
Last week's.
So similar art style, but no nipples.
Actually, yeah, it is kind of has a very cartoony look to it. But no, from Archie Comics, I picked up Kevin Keller.
You picked it up just because it had your name in the title, right?
Actually, it didn't even dawn on me that...
bullshit.
I had no idea that it even resembled me.
That it had the same name. Or that it was like a guy in a suit opening up his shirt with the big K on it.
Yeah, which is just the variant edition.
Kevin got a variant.
I know.
Wow. You're all grown up now.
Archie variant?
The full title is Veronica Presents Kevin Keller.
Oh, okay.
Which the only thing I knew, I knew Archie's still in distribution and so wildly popular, that Kevin Keller is gay. In this universe, which I don't know how long they've had a openly gay character in the universe, but...
You know, I vaguely remember hearing something a couple, you know, maybe a year or two ago.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, it doesn't impact, at least what I read here. I actually picked up issue two. I think they released number three. But
variant edition 2 and then 208 behind it.
Oh, because it's Veronica Presents.
Oh, it's Veronica Presents, yeah, number 208, yeah. But it's the Kevin Keller number 2. I got it.
So, basically, this issue I picked up, it was Kevin Keller's hanging out with Veronica, Kevin's family's getting together, and putting on a surprise birthday party for his dad. And the story is basically talking about Kevin growing up, and his experiences with his dad being in the military, and him writing stories about his dad going off. It's a fun little story. I mean, it doesn't go real deep. It has a nice message to it. I mentioned he's gay in this book, and they touch about it a little bit in his little flashbacks when he's growing up and when he moved to the United States in high school, where he was being teased for being a lady man. But they don't say that he's gay, but the bullies kind of like, hey, they don't say like, hey, you faggot,
yeah,
or anything like that. But
they call him a sissy or
a lady boy.
Oh, lady boy.
A lady
boy. Wow, there's a term I haven't heard since the 1950s.
Really? See, when I hear lady boy, I just think of chicks with dicks. it's inspiring, and it, actually anyone who does pick this up, if a teenager picks this up and reads it, I could see it actually being inspirational.
Cool.
Dan
Parent both wrote and did the art on this.
Yeah, and actually, when I was working volunteering at that convention, guarding the exit door, actually, he was in. He had a booth right next to me, like the whole time, and there were a lot of people rolling up and talking to him and slapping down some serious money on commissions. And I had no idea that there was such a following. I kind of just laugh about it, for snicker, ha ha ha. Or that brief time that I worked in a comic book store, people would actually pick up like 6 or 7 issues at a time.
It's one of those things. I mean, obviously, Archie is still out there publishing and still making money, but it's just a perfect example of how so many people have so many different tastes. Some of the stuff that we like, other people may not like. Actually, a perfect example. Tony and I love Deadpool Kills Marvel Universe, and you were a little turned off by it. But at the same time...
Yeah, and it's this kind of stuff here that I look at it and really, this is just it's good, clean fun with a nice message. The art is crisp.
Well, it's one of those things, too. You can't, people may not like it at first, but give it a shot. I had the same thing with Punisher in Space, and... Good old Frank
space,
boy, turn me
space
around.
Punisher, not Punisher in Space.
Well, whatever, he was in space.
Yeah, one thing, it's the little things that I notice about this thing, this book here, Kevin Keller, number 2. No ads, except for this one on the
back.
Except
for the back cover?
Yeah. Does that ever happen?
It doesn't happen that often in the mainstream books. I mean, when you get into the more indie books, but I know Marvel has ads galore.
Yeah, every other page.
Well, yeah.
Do you think I'm going to actually take an idea from soccer, okay, or golf, where a sponsor will sponsor the tournament,
mm-hmm.
and then just they limit or eliminate commercials altogether.
Yeah.
Do you think that will ever happen with comic books? It will be. Wolverine brought to you by the Idaho Potato Commission. and then just no ads.
Yeah, only if in the comic book he's using his claws to slice up potatoes into chips and fries.
This natural cut.
Yeah, snicked.
I could see a company doing that if they did, but I think, though, a lot of big companies just pay overall Marvel to put their same ads in every single comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... the revenue stream for just one company to just do one, plus it'd be dumb for that company to just do the line of Wolverines. Why not expand your market by doing all the comic books. So
sure, it would be expensive, and I don't think it would really fit the Marvel way. But you got that damn mouse running things over there.
Yeah,
you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
because if I see Disney's stock plummet, watch out.
Yep. So, all right, Tony, you got another book before we move on to our next segment. What do you got?
All right, I got Wolverine 312. I normally don't like talking about the same stories every single week. I want to give our viewers something a little bit different, but I kind of have to talk about this one, especially after last week when we were talking about the other Wolverine and the big reveal of Remus, the sister of Romulus. And any of the listeners who've read Wolverine understand who Romulus is. We talked about it briefly last week. He's kind of the main instigator of Wolverine's past. Jeff Loeb has done an amazing job with this story. Was it Simone Bianchi?
Simone Bianchi, yep. Yeah.
He's she's still freaking the art. I enjoy the art. It's kind of surreal looking, not cartoony, fake like Archie or anything. It's very...
Oh, yeah, it's the exact opposite of Archie.
Yeah. I just, like I said, I like how it's going. I wasn't, thrilled with the whole Remus thing, but after the House of M, when Wolverine got his memories back, or at least most of them, it was kind of one of the biggest let-the-cat-out-of-the-bag scenarios ever with Wolverine. I mean, that was kind of his big reason why you read him, is sometimes they would bring a person from the past that he didn't remember, and that kind of got you sucked in the story of, who is this? What I'm finding out, though, is they didn't really let everything out of the bag. There's still a lot of mystery to his past, and it's what makes him a great character. Jeff's doing a great job kind of giving out some of the tidbits of info, but keeping the big secrets and intrigue of the story. One of the things that we talked last week, too, was the whole different race of Homo Lupin, which was the whole, a lot of mutants having this
feral gene. Yeah.
Something I must have missed when I stopped reading some of the Wolverines was that's actually not true. Remus said that was kind of a lie that Romulus concocted. You kind of followed that. It's because he's not, there isn't a race, but he's trying to create that new race, that Homo Superior. Wolverine kind of tells her, Apocalypse tried that, Magneto tried it.
Sinister tried it.
Didn't quite work out. What she wasn't quite getting was not looking for that race just to kind of be subjugative, looking for that race to pretty much all... Okay, so kind of the same thing, kind of all rule. But the biggest reveal was towards the end, they break into Romulus's house.
Is it a nice house?
It's a nice house.
Have a nice house.
What happens is, we talked about before too, Romulus doesn't have real claws. He wore a gauntlet. Didn't have bone claws or anything. He has a healing factor. Kind of looks a little bit like half Sabretooth, half Wolverine. But what in this, what you see is he wanted to always be kind of like Wolverine. He made an actual Weapon X tank in this mansion and somehow now has real adamantium claws. The big reveal is Wolverine's kind of saying, Romulus's involvement with Weapon X is mainly to become a cheap imitation of Wolverine. That's when Romulus reminds Wolverine that Wolverine's the one that asked to be implanted with those memories of Weapon X and him being the guinea pig, because Weapon X has been and always will be Logan's idea.
Interesting.
That right there is why I really want to talk about this book, because that's a big part of his past that readers have always known.
Yeah.
Weapon X. To understand more of this backstory of superior race, of having this thing, to actually kind of flip it on its head and be like, Wolverine's actually kind of been the one in charge.
Yeah, that's a very interesting...
That he had these people implant him to make him not feel like he was in charge. It's got me very...
Now, if that was actually the case...
That's the thing, and it could be another lie, but in the last panel, Wolverine's thinking to himself and... lies out lies. Why do I have this sick feeling in my stomach, though, that he's actually telling the truth? It's one of those things of, okay, to the reader, we're not bullshitting. This is something kind of huge in Wolverine's life that is now going to be revealed.
Yeah.
And is going to have a lot of complications and a lot of matters if he is the true instigator of the Weapon X program. So overall, it was awesome. Definitely pick it up, especially if you've always been intrigued with his past and want to learn a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. So, well, that does it for Off the Shelf, which, again, brought to you guys by Detroit Fanfare. Go check them out. What do you guys want to do? You want to go on to the Indie Turnpike, or do you want to do some news and notes first?
What are we sitting on time?
Oh, we got plenty.
We can do some notes.
Do some news and notes? All right. Well,
mix it up.
The big news this week is that a certain person at DC decided to announce his retirement. Not really retirement, I guess. The fact that he's leaving DC via Twitter, which would be...
You say retirement. Like, how old is he?
Well, he's not. He's, I'm guessing, in his late 30s to early 40s. I'm guessing 40s.
But good buddy of the show.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld. I honestly don't understand what's going on with him. And I don't mean to bash him because I don't know him. But from an outside perspective, what he has done is he's... A couple weeks ago, we talked about him. And for those of you that didn't hear, he made a comment about the people working... People that work on Deadpool, he referred to as D-list talent. And created himself a shitstorm of stuff going on there.
I kind of went off on him and...
Yeah, we kind of bleeped you out.
Because I said some things that
could get
me in trouble.
Well, you probably just shouldn't have said. But, you know, so anyway, this Wednesday, I think it was, is when he releases, you know, that he's leaving because he doesn't like the... He basically doesn't like the way that the corporation is run as far as how they make changes on him, this and that. I can kind of understand that because I've read some of the stuff of what he's talking about. He wants more control. He wants the freedom to do what he wants. But, you know, I mean, he left Marvel back in the day to go start Image with, you know, Jim Lee and Eric Larson and Mark Silvestri and all those other guys that left that... So that they wouldn't have that, but yet he goes back and starts working for DC, and I guess I'm, you know, why would you be surprised? You worked for a big corporation once, you didn't like it. The biggest thing with it is that he seems to have gone on to some kind of an attack on certain individuals. You know, just with some of the stuff that he's saying, he's been going after Tom Brevoort, who is one of the... I think he's one of the head editors at Marvel, and he's been going after Scott Snyder, the guy who writes Batman. And, you know, where I have a problem, and you guys can kind of, you know, fill in and tell me if you think this as well, is that I think he's committing career suicide in the fact that he's calling Brevoort, refers to him as that loser fat ass, you know, on Twitter.
I don't get it, man. Because he obviously has some issues with the way things are running with the companies he's working for. Now, okay, yeah, it happens to be DC. It happens to be Warner. Day. But you know, most people, when they have problems with their jobs, they either talk it out, and if they don't talk it out, they leave.
Now,
why throw all this dirty laundry out there?
I don't get that. Well, and Brevoort works for Marvel, doesn't even work for DC. I mean, he refers to him as a doucher and another, you know, and another thing.
I don't see a problem with that. I call you guys douchebags all the time.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, I mean, Tom Brevoort, like, actually called him out on Twitter, said, you know, said, "You remain a sweetheart, Rob. Don't go changing. Also, feel free to say any of this to my face, you feckless bully," which I think was funny because, you know.
And Liefeld requires a response.
Yeah, he's like, "Happy to, then you can bump me with your gut." You know, it's like, okay.
I honestly think that he is, all right, So I personally, as I've said before, enjoyed the pouches in his drawings, some of them. but at the same point, I couldn't defend him just bashing these people because that's just asinine. Like, you don't shit where you eat, and you've pissed off the whole industry that you work in. Is just, there's no other way to explain it.
Who is going to want to work with him after this?
Only thing that I'm also thinking is, his notoriety was like huge back in the day when he was doing a lot of mainstream comics and stuff, and he's kind of fallen off the beaten path and kind of been beaten up on that path with his, you know, people talking about his drawings and everything, that it's better to be infamous than not known. I honestly think that he's doing a lot of this on purpose. He's smart enough to know this, and the only reason why I say that is because they've mentioned that they're, one of his comic books that he created, Bloodstrike, is going to be turned into a movie. They announced it like last week. That just got optioned. People that don't know, it was created in like 1993, I believe. It's an ultra-violent action comic book. I read a issue back when I was a kid. A lot of characters seem kind of ripped off from different characters, which I think is kind of interesting. I mean, teach their own. If it's more like, I think, an homage to someone than anything else. I honestly think because of this and him getting that is why I quit. I mean, he's going to be working on this movie. I think to get his name out there for people to, who the fuck is this guy, is blowing up on the Twitterverse. I'm hoping that is, and that he's not a self-pretentious dick, but...
Well, speaking of that, he actually referred to Scott Snyder in a tweet where it just said, "Get over yourself, you pretentious prick."
Oh, well...
So, I mean,
I guess I want to just repeat, Rob, get over yourself, pretentious prick.
And he talked about how he was berated in these direct messages and then actually took pictures of them and posted them. And maybe he's reading something different than I'm reading, but what I saw in there was Scott Snyder saying, are you aiming these attacks at me? Because if you are, I don't understand why. And he's basically gone, doesn't really matter who I'm aiming it at, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. I didn't say you. And he's like, well, you said the head Batman writer. I'm the head Batman writer, you know. And he's just like going, yeah, whatever. And Scott Snyder's like, why are you angry at me? I don't understand. But yet, Liefeld seems to think that, you know, in his words, he's being berated by Scott Snyder. You know, but I will say one of the funniest things was is that...
When he said humdinger?
Humdinger, yeah. I think one of the best things was Scott Snyder actually did respond at one point and said, "Nice, your Twitter feed's the best thing you've written all year." That, I'm like, that is beautiful. I'm like, that is shit. Beautiful. So, you know, I don't really know what's going on with this guy. It's kind of like he's just become a train wreck and like he's imploding. You know, I don't really know. I honestly don't know how he's ever going to go back and work in the field.
Oh, I mean, there's enough indies that he could team up with. I mean, he's a polarizing name. Someone will give him a shot.
Who's going to want to work with him though? It's going to be the question.
People will suck it up.
And there's Christian Bale has his rants on his sets, and people still work with him.
Yeah,
but he's not going. But he's not. I don't know. Would this be Twitter bombing people? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really know, but
is that the correct
Twitter
term?
Bombing?
Yeah, I don't. I don't know. I just take that. I just think of it's a negative.
Yeah, I don't
tweet
know.
On somebody. Did I make that up? Have I heard that before?
You've heard. Well, yeah, I've heard Twitter bomb before. You're our Twitter expert.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call myself a Twitter expert. I mean,
you're not good at twats.
I have twatted. but all right, moving on. A couple other little pieces of news that I saw. Matt Fraction's Defenders is being canceled due to lackluster sales. You know, which I'm not really surprised. I mean, that's kind of a stretch of a book for a lot of people.
I read it. I read it just because of the characters that were in it and part of it. I honestly wasn't intrigued with the story.
I got two issues in, and I said, this one's not for me. That one got canceled. They're ending the New Avengers, but I don't think it's necessarily a cancellation as much as it probably is.
The name change.
The switch over with things for Marvel now.
That's going to be an interesting 2 months come October or November when these books start.
The great thing for us is that's going to be right when we're going to Fanfare. You know, so we're going to have tons of fun stuff to talk about as far as what kind of changes are going on.
Did you hear that the Daredevil is reverting back to Disney now?
Yeah.
Marvel?
Supposed to be, but there have been so many rumors going back and forth. Is it official?
Yeah, now it's been pretty much official. So
sweet.
Mainly because Fox doesn't want to give up their Fantastic Four franchise that they still have.
Yeah.
But there's what's great and what's going to be great for the movies coming up, though, is there's been a couple. Blade and that whole series reverted back to Marvel. Punisher and their series reverted back to Marvel.
Thank God.
So now they have Daredevil back. Now Marvel Studios can start pumping out some better, making them an overall same universe type movies.
And perfect example, Spider-Man, Daredevil, and Punisher are all primarily New York-based characters. So, you know, it'd be awesome to see them, you know, having some kind of a even cameos. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'd love to see a cameo in one of those.
But. And that's one of the saddest things is that what we probably will never see, though, reverted back to Marvel for another, in our lifetime probably, is X-Men property. And that just sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're, who's got, I think Fox.
That's one, Fox. Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to milk that and use that. And can use any term of mutant. I read any term of any of those people, even people that they haven't cast yet, that have to do with the X-Men.
Well, are you disappointed because there's no potential for crossovers?
Yes.
Okay.
And because the movies aren't set in, as we read comics, we know that this shit's happening in New York, this stuff's happening in Wakanda, this stuff's happening in the same world. Granted, some series kind of veer off from what the mainstream stuff's going in the big events. You still kind of know that Wolverine could someday meet up with
Daredevil. The Daredevil Wolverine team up in issue 196 when I was a kid was one of my all time favorite issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the things that sucked me into comics.
It's just kind of, you know, having the movies be able to take those freedoms, take the chance to include some other characters.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with you, but if they keep the movies fresh, interesting, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I'm with you. It would like to be nice. It'd be nice to have it all under one umbrella, but just if you keep on churning out crap like Wolverine and Derek's favorite X-Men 3, then fuck you.
Well, you know, here's the. One of the things, though, speaking of Wolverine, supposedly this new movie called The Wolverine.
Is that what they're going to call it?
Yeah. The Wolverine.
Of course, they've already done the Origins, so they can't call it Origins.
Yeah, but apparently this is going to be, what they're saying is that it's going to be a standalone movie that it won't that you won't have to have seen any other movies.
Do they know what year they're going to release it?
I think it's coming out
2013, I thought.
I think. I'll have to look that one up. But, yeah, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. One of the things that, you talk about, it would be awesome to see everything, all the X-Men properties go back to Marvel. But at the same time, if they did that, would they still want to cast the same people in those same roles? Now, there's only a few. I mean, we kind of talked casting once upon a time, and we were horrible at it. You know, but realistically, who else would you want to play Professor X? Would you want somebody else? I mean, for me, I'd say no, but I don't know what kind of contract obligations there would be if that did revert. Could you have the same
people? That's a tough one to recast because he is the gold standard for Professor Xavier.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that and, I mean, the studios would be dumb to not pay any kind of amount of money, Patrick Stewart, to be able to come and be Professor X for their, you know, contract or no, they would be giving up the person that in the real world was made to be Professor X.
Yeah, so I don't know. Oh, there was one other cancellation. I almost forgot to mention. Avengers Academy got canceled.
That one was an interesting title. The reason why, it's something that I've bitched about before, not having new characters, writers rehashing the same person. Oh, this person came back from the dead. Avengers Academy was interesting.
They created a couple new characters.
They created a lot of new characters. You know. And that's what was interesting with that book. And I periodically read through some of them.
Mm-hmm.
The stories weren't as, you know, universal, exploding, this and that, as some of the main big team Avengers. But it was interesting enough to see these new characters. And even though the book's ending, I'm hoping these characters get a little more fleshed out in the overall Marvel Universe, because they're new people that you can explore and create any paths you want with them.
Yep. Well, that's going to do it for news. We got a couple minutes left here, so I'm going to end it on the Indie Turnpike. This week, I picked up Foster, number one, from Dog Year Entertainment. And it's written by Brian Buccellato, and the art was done by Noel Tuazon. And I picked this one up completely on a lark. It was one of the few comics that, and I don't know why, but they actually had this one bagged in the store on the shelf, so I didn't open it to see what the art looked like. But the cover was beautiful, and it was just eye-catching. I'm like, you know, I've never heard of Dog Year. I've never heard of this title. Never heard of the artist or the writer. I just figured I was going to try something new. The story is based in like a 1960s or 1970s type setting. And they say it's no particular city. It's just kind of like all the big cities combined. And inside the title page, they actually say that this is like Gotham 40 years ago, which I think is like a really...
So it's like New San Angeles?
Yeah, New San Angiego. Chicago, Detroit.
Yeah. Tokyo.
Yeah.
E.
All right. I'm just waiting for you to be done. So
anyway, we can keep on going.
Yeah, so this book centers around a guy by the name of Eddie Foster, who as a child actually saw a real monster in his backyard that was like attacking his dog. And as what I'm assuming it, as a late 20s, possibly early 30s adult, he is now an alcoholic war veteran who lives in a shitty part of town and is seemingly making it by day to day, but, you know, seems to have a good heart. There's a little boy named Ben who lives down the hall from him, who lives with his junkie mom named Trina, who you actually never see. And Trina disappears and, you know, takes care of Ben over a couple day period. As the book progresses, Eddie actually gets attacked by one of these man-beast monsters, like the one that he remembers as a child, who is looking for, quote-unquote, the boy. Where's the boy? And he attempts to keep Ben safe. They get attacked. They're chased down by a group of these monsters. While they're trying to protect him, Eddie has Ben go to the roof of one of the nearby buildings. Before Eddie can stop all the monsters with a shotgun, a number of them are able to chase Ben up to these rooftops. And Eddie runs up there, finally gets up the top, and the last page is kind of a shock because you see Ben with these claw-like hands standing on a pile of these bodies that he's just, you know, eviscerated, you know, just standing there. It was shocking. I wasn't actually expecting that for a twist. So, you know, like I said, I picked this one up on a lark. Very, very happy I did. And, you know, I really had no clue what this was going to be about, but I got lucky on this. This is one of the reasons why we do the Indie Turnpike and why we do try and pick up different things. Because sometimes, man, you find gems that you had no idea about. Now, this was actually the second printing of the book. And when I looked online, I haven't been able to find a first printing. So I don't know if it was done by an incredibly small run on there. You know, and as for the second printing, you might actually have a hard time finding the second printing as well. You know, it's a smaller publisher, you know, Dog Year. Have you guys ever heard of them?
Nope.
Yeah. But when I got to my local comic shop on Wednesday at noon, this was the last copy. Now, I don't know if they ordered one copy or if they ordered 50, but it was the last one. So, you know, the art is very unique in this book. The coloring really is superb. It does set the tone quite well. I really don't know how to explain the art.
I see the art and, like,
reminds me a little bit of a colored Walking Dead-ish.
Kind of, yeah.
I think it's a little rougher than that. When I see it, I'm thinking like, do they just try to get this out quick?
Well, you know, and it's odd because in some panels I absolutely love, you know, but it's almost. I really don't even know how to explain it.
I mean, it's not. I don't really want to say polished because, I see Wolverine and
these
Watchmen books. I'm saying it's crisp, but this is
it's more of a cartoonish
grit.
Yeah, a gritty cartoon. I guess it's probably a good way of putting it. But you know, I am gonna pick this one up again. I guess the best way I could describe this book for somebody who hasn't seen it or read it is it's kind of like film noir mixed with some horror. It's gritty, it's real. The story's really good. I want to see where it goes. So we have interwebs real quick, and then we got booze in the book, and we got to be done.
All right. Last week gave you a little nugget from the web of the gutters. Very good site. I mean, it will give you kind of news and it will make you laugh as well of comic books. This, we're going to go into a different direction. Something I would like to talk about a little bit more is games, video games particularly. And the website this week is Dorkly Bits. This website is phenomenally funny. It has everything about it is video games. So whether way back in the day, to 8-bit characters, to new characters from Skyrim and all these other games and Halo. They have comics, they have pictures of like real world, like people that dress up in cosplay. They have the best is their videos, and especially their originals, because their originals are taking like the 8-bit graphics and making a hilarious little short 1-minute, 2-minute movie.
Is this the website where I saw Christopher Walken
doing
the Zelda walkthrough?
Christopher Walken through Zelda?
Yeah.
Yes.
Christopher Walken through Zelda. Yeah, that's
probably the most hilarious thing if you guys can look it up on the website. we'll show you that in a bit, Kevin. Like I said, overall, this kind of segment of the show is kind of give you guys some insight of some good links if you haven't heard of them that kind of explore some just fun aspects of the industries, entertainment industries, and
Tony has a plethora of these. I don't know how he finds this stuff on the internet. Like every time I see you, you're like, "Dude, check this out!" And I'm like, "How? What? Yeah,
I'm the lawnmower man. I'm plugged in." So, like I said, dorklybits.com. Check it out. It's a really good site.
Yeah,
spell that for people.
D O R K L Y. B-I-T-S.
I thought you were going to say D-O-R-K-L-Y bits. All right. Well, we're going to get things closed up here this week with Booze in a Book. This week I picked up The Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom, number 104 from IDW. Written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Samnee, and colors by Jordy Belair. I'm going to pair this issue with a Tom Collins. And for those of you not familiar with Tom Collins, it's a cocktail made from gin, lemon juice, sugar, and carbonated water.
Ooh, I think that's very, very time-appropriate.
Yeah.
Is that why you picked that?
It is, because, you know, I'm putting these two together because they're both great throwbacks to what I think is a more refined time. You know, they're classic examples of sticking to basics and highlighting the best of what there can be both in a cocktail and a comic book. Go pick up this comic book and go have yourself a Tom Collins.
So this book and that drink, is that going to inspire you to start wearing suits and hats?
Well, I'm already figuring out how to, like, make a rocket pack. I don't know about the suits and hats, but, you know, the problem I have is I keep singeing my butt, so.
The problem I have is I keep getting drunk and thinking I can fly, but.
All right, guys, well, that is going to do it for us. Make sure that you come find us. You can find us on Twitter, Drunk on Comics. You can find us facebook.com/drunkoncomics. You can find us at drunkoncomics.com or drunkoncomics@gmail.com. I think pretty much if you just put Drunk on Comics into anything that you're searching for, you're going to find us. So come visit us. say hello, give us some feedback, tell us what you liked, tell us what you didn't like, tell me how many sticks I'm going to get poked with at Fanfare in October. And remember, Tony's giving out free sticks. asshole. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it.
Adios, muchachos.
Well done, my friends. Well done.
All right, guys. My name is Derek on behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics. Keep reading those books, and we'll be back to talk to you about them more next week. So, yeah.
Bye.
Please remind me, I said, someone please remind me how to just let go.